evening, everyone. My name is Lewis Smith, and tonight you are watching the MMA UK's review show of Cage Warriors 113, which took place on Friday. Obviously, a really good event. I know it's a little bit of a troubled time at the moment, but we did luckily get these fights on, which I think most people are grateful for. So we're going to be talking about that this evening. With me are my three esteemed guests. Firstly, I'll come to you, the main man himself, Chris Emmanuel. Chris, how's it going this evening, buddy?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. All the better for seeing you, Chris, as always.
You're such a smooth talker, you are.
And obviously then we've got the powerhouse, that is Katie Hunter. Katie, how's it going?
Hi, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
How's self-isolation treating you, Katie? You're looking very well.
Thank you. I did the doorstep drop to my mum earlier on today to leave her a card and present outside. So I felt really bad running back to the car, but, you know, got to be safe, haven't we?
Exactly, we have. And last but certainly not least is Glenn the Sledge Williams. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
Oh, pretty good, Lou. How are you, mate?
I'm not too bad. Right again to this tonight. Obviously, we had a big card on the weekend, something that I was looking forward to. Obviously, a lot of us had tickets. We were meant to be there. We were meant to be up watching Cage Warriors on Friday, which was going to go down at the Indigo. And then UFC on Saturday, which was going to be in the main arena at the O2. So really looking forward to that. It looked at one point that the whole thing was going to be off. Obviously, the UFC pulling out due to flight restrictions with the coronavirus. And Cage Warriors being not allowed to compete in the Indigo. But Cage Warriors were persistent. They moved it up to Manchester. Whether you liked it or not, a lot of people wanted it on. A lot of people didn't. But they went ahead and we had some great fights. So I think we were all grateful for it in the end. Chris, I'll come to you first. Main event, we had, let me see if I can see this name, Bartosz Fabinski against Darren Stewart, a UFC fight that got pulled onto the card last minute. Obviously, Bartosz got the win, unanimous decision. A bit of a frustrating night for Darren. What do you think of the main event of this card?
It's a really good game plan by Fabinski. He said beforehand that all he wanted to do was just go and take Stewart down and grind him out, and that's what he did for three rounds. And the best bit of the fight for me was Stewart's elbow in the first round, where he just sliced open Fabinski's head. Brad Wharton sounded like he's going to have kittens. I don't know whether he got some. I don't know whether he got some blood on his crisp white shoes or something. But it literally looked like an explosion. The blood just spurted out, and it covered both fighters for the remainder of the fight, actually. But Fabinski just ran. It's just the most frustrating fight for Stewart, because you know that Stewart's an explosive guy. And you can see by the end, halfway through the third round, he was absolutely exhausted. He's mentally drained. He's physically drained. And for someone to do that to Stewart, who is just, he's improved exponentially ever since he went to the UFC. You know, you can see that his all round game's come on leaps and bounds ever since he stepped into the octagon. And for someone to do that to Stewart is ridiculously impressive. And the judges' scorecards were 30-27, 30-26, 30-26. And as much as I'm a big Stewart fan, I think that's probably fair. I think round two was probably a 10-8. It was an absolute domination, unfortunately. But I felt for the guys, because there have been such exciting fights all the way through. And technically, it was a really good fight. But in terms of excitement, it didn't quite measure up to the earlier fights, which obviously we're going to talk about later on.
Yeah. And Katie, also, I know you're big friends with the dentist. What's your take on that?
Wearing my t-shirt in solidarity of him today, my dentist t-shirt. You've got to feel for him. And he's, you know, those guys in the main event accepted the UFC being moved to the States initially at one point. Then, obviously, it turned out that was just going to be the main event. So they would have thought it was off completely. Then they accepted to fight on Cage Warriors. Then they accepted to fight different opponents. Then they accepted to move up to Manchester. Like, I don't think we can, I think people are underestimating how big of an ask that was. And obviously, I don't think it changed the outcome of the fight or anything, but Darren is his own biggest critic, and just reading his posts and speaking to him, you know, he's very hard on himself about his, you know, inability to get back up. But like you said, Chris, that was the guy's whole game plan. Fabinski's whole game plan, and you know, he probably just didn't have enough time. I know he's working on that all the time anyway, but didn't have enough time to train for that change of opponent.
And Glenn, from a fighter's perspective, you know, we saw Darren get pretty much controlled for the entire fight. How frustrating is that kind of fight when you just can't get back up and can't stop being taken down?
I've been in that position myself, mate, but I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to beat them to the punch now. Sometimes you see one top doing that and two underneath. As a fighter, you know that's the only way you can lose is by being dominated like that. He's probably frustrated because he probably wouldn't get back and bang, but just the only way to not be in that position is don't go there in the beginning.
Yeah, so is that something that you think you would say, you know, he needs to go back to the training room and address that now in the coming months?
Knowing Darren, he probably does anyway, but it's probably, yeah, he could probably think about going, beating up the punch and done. You know, not standing and banging and shooting earlier or trying to take him down first, or, you know, everyone covers every scenario, but it's just been beating the punch in it.
And that's the thing, Chris, go on. And just reading his post, he was saying he has put so much into that side of his game that then when you are dominated like that, it makes people question what they can do to try and address that area of their game. The one thing I would have liked to see, when he did open up that cut on the side of his head, if he couldn't get back up, maybe he could have done a bit more damage, open that up a bit more.
Yeah,
I don't think he'd have had any blood left in him if he had, because all it, certainly look at round two, it was disgusting.
it's like watching
a vampire orgy. The amount of blood was just horrific. But going back to what Glenn said, in round three, Stuart actually did go to take him down first of all. He did this big takedown the first 30 seconds of the third, and it looked as if he was probably going to turn the tide. And then all of a sudden, from nowhere, Fabinski again, just the guy's got energy for days. Considering the amount of blood that he lost, I watched this back today. His legs looked blue, as if he literally had no blood left in him by the end of the fight. But he just kept going and going and going. That cardio is just off the charts. It was astounding, because Stuart has cardio for days as well. And for someone to do that to Stuart is crazy impressive.
Yeah. Chris, I tell you what I wanted to ask you as well. Because I know when we talk about UFC fights, right, we always say like three losses. And it's a big deal. Like, you could end up getting cut. You don't want to take losses in the UFC if you can help it. But with that fight being scheduled on Cage Warriors, do you think that's kind of like a freebie for the guys who were on there, do you think? And not only that, but what do you think of those guys going on to a Cage Warriors show? Do you think that's a positive thing or a negative thing for them?
I would hope it's a free pass. Because of, like Katie said, the amount of change that they had and everything they've had to deal with. And plus, there's the mental anguish of having to deal with the fact that you're going into an arena, which, okay, it's got a lot, it doesn't have a full crowd in it, but it's still got all of the staff in there, still got all of the other fighters in there as well, all of the other coaches. We're supposed to be socially distancing, which isn't easy for me to say with the list, socially distancing ourselves at the moment. And it will have a mental effect on you. So I would hope that the UFC take that into account when judging this fight. As for the fighters going on to Cage Warriors, I think it's a really smart deal by Cage Warriors. They clearly have a very good relationship with the UFC. I expect the UFC compensated them in some respect for having that on there, which probably helped cover the cost of the loss of the crowd, because that was virtually sold out, wasn't it? So it was a very smart business deal, probably by both parties. UFC kept their fighters active, which to a degree they're contractually obliged to do. Cage Warriors had probably some financial assistance for putting that on. And obviously Stuart's fought there before. So it was, it was good work all round, I thought. Yeah.
It was so awesome seeing him come out in his dentist mask again. I mean, a bit topical anyway. I hope everyone knew that he used to wear that as the dentist, but It really says it all about that Reebok deal, that people can't have their personality shining through in their walkouts for the UFC. But yeah, oh, I'd love him to be able to wear that for the UFC. Maybe they could get him a little Reebok branded one.
Yeah, maybe. I don't see it happening, but you know, like you said, it's nice to see. It's nice to see, isn't it? It is nice to see the personality coming through. Speaking of personality coming through, the main reason I wanted to do this card tonight was for the next fight, the co-main event of the evening. Obviously, Mason Jones versus Joe McColgan for K1 Cage Warriors lightweight belt. A massive event for Mason. A massive event for the whole of Wales, really. Obviously, Mason getting an absolutely magnificent KO in the first round. Glenn, I'll come to you first. What did you make of Mason's performance on Friday night?
To be honest, Sue, I thought it would have been finished later in the fight because I thought Mason would have broke him down. He's a bit of a grinder, but he grinds people down by striking. Now, I know McColgan. McColgan's fought my coach, and his leg kicks are savage. So I thought you'd be trying to leg kick Mason. Mason would check in, and it would have been battle leg kicks, I thought, until the later fights. But the striking on both of them was brilliant. It was really good. When he was in the clinch, trying to strike dirty boxing in the clinch, was I thought technically, it didn't look amazing, like it wasn't a bang fest. But the technical dirty strikes was really good. Mason trying to take him down, you know, Mason's a black belt judo, he got really high level wrestling under Craig Ewers. They are very good, and he couldn't take him down. So obviously he went back to his bread and butter, back to striking, and caught him on that knee. And I thought it was a really, really good, really good round.
Yeah, it was an amazing fight, and obviously we saw the pictures on social media. The guys down in Wales going absolutely mental. He's a very popular guy down here. I'll come to you next. Obviously, one of your favourite fighters, Lewis Mason. what did you make of this fight, Katie?
I really enjoyed it, and I think, you know, Joe is such a tough guy, and I was amazed actually that he's only had one more fight than Mason, I think, because I just think of him as being around forever, and he's fought such high level guys. And
they were the same, innit? Oh, yeah, 10, and then sorry, no contest, my fault.
Yeah, so I was amazed, like, but he's fought people like Peter Queeley and Jai Herbert, like, he is a very high level guy, and I thought the fight would last longer, and it just shows you the level that Mason is at. He's, to my mind, he's ready for the UFC. I understand if they want to hold him back for another couple of fights, you know, really make sure that he's ready, but he's got to be number 6, I think. 96, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen Joe fight a couple of times. Like obviously Glenn alluded to, I saw him fight his coach, Frango, and he's been absolutely awesome in his Cage Warriors career. Obviously, he's took a couple of losses, but on the most part, he's been really, really good. I was a little bit worried. I thought Mason would get down in the later rounds, but I always kind of had this awareness that Joe's got such a good striking. So something could get caught, so I was worried. But like we've said, you know, Mason just blew him away, really. The power he had with those leg kicks. He was a different level. And obviously, you alluded to it, Katie, so I'll come to you, Chris. Do you think Mason hangs around now and has another fight in Cage Warriors, or do you think they sign straight up to the UFC?
Mason's only 24, so okay, he's had, if you look at his fight resume, it's not just MMA, he's highly decorated across multiple martial arts, but the improvement that you've seen from Mason, certainly in the last couple of fights, his game plan was absolutely spot on Friday night, because Joe McColgan is such a talented striker, he's coming from a boxing background as well, so Mason just controlled the distance, controlled the pace of the fight, and he just chopped his legs out from underneath him, just took away his base entirely. As Glenn was saying, closing in and the dirty boxing as well in the clinch. It was just such intelligent fighting. Two fights ago, Mason wasn't that smart, I don't think. You know, there's been a couple of times where he's just gone in, and because he's so strong and so powerful and so quick, he just bangs at people. Whereas with Joe, it was a completely different situation. So I think with him only being 24, one, maybe two more fights, and he won't just go into the UFC just at the base level. He could actually go into the UFC as a real name to be reckoned with, because, you know, with his already 9-0 record, and the names that he's got on his resume already, he really could be something special.
Yeah, definitely. No, there's meant to be a card down in Cardiff now in June. I mean, I don't know what the time scale for this isolation is like. I think it's probably looking a little bit cutting it fine as to where that event goes ahead now, I would think. So I know he said he wanted to headline that, but do you think there's no hope for that, Chris?
Absolutely no hope. You've got to take into account as well. All the gyms are closed. You know, there's social distancing is going to have to go on. People need a good couple of months fight camp to fight at this level. There's no way on earth we're going to see any more MMA until maybe September at the earliest, I would say.
Yeah, same as me, September, I think.
Yeah, it's quite sad, really, isn't it? Like I said, I enjoy this card so much, but like I said, you think now we've got a couple of months without it. It's quite sad, Kate, isn't it?
Oh, it's heartbreaking, isn't it? Just obviously, safety comes first and health comes first, and you know, 100%, that's the right thing to do. But I felt like this year, more than any other year, had been kind of not kicking off until about March. Like the first Cage Warriors card of the year was Manchester, which was the 7th of March.
Yeah.
So, you know, we only had two Cage Warriors events and now maybe nothing for 6 months.
Yes. It's a crazy time. I mean, like I said, we can't complain because there's so much more going on in the world now. But
oh, yeah, 100%.
As MMA journalists and fighters, you know, this is what we do. So obviously we have a little moan sometimes. But I mean, Glenn, I want to come back to you. What does this mean? Like you train, you coach as well. What does it mean for guys in your gym coming up to see a kid like Mason doing so well and get a Cage Warriors belt?
Yeah, it's just what they're all going to aspire to be, isn't it? But Mason as well, I think what people don't see in Mason, although he's really loyal to his coaches, to Craig, to Greg, he trains a lot of different purposes. So he'll come to our gym, a lot of the youngsters will see him come in and think, you know, I can be him, I can do that as long as I knuckle down. Because he, to be fair, he is a model pro. He is, you know, he's Zed switched on, he trains really hard, he goes out 20 miles per mile to learn his trade, comes back, there's loads of different things. So yeah, he's just brilliant for what I call grassroots MMA as well.
Yeah,
no, he's
it's amazing. Like I said, 4 Cage Warriors champions for Wales now. I was in here Friday night screaming at the computer. Absolutely over the moon. I was gutted not to be there myself, and I know you were meant to be coming as well, Katie, so it was disappointing. But to see him get that, you know, really great for all of us in Wales. So congratulations to Mason and all the guys down at Celtic Pride and all his team. Like Glenn says, he does train at a couple of different places. So, yeah, so that was the co-main event. Obviously, Mason taking that illustrious lightweight belt. And the fight before that was a fight between the Bear, as we was calling him commentary. David, I just got him written down as the Bear now. That's all I've got.
That is his surname, isn't it? David Bear?
Yeah, his nickname's the David the Bear. He should have been, bear in mind that he's French, he should have been David Le Bear, surely.
Yeah.
how good was that walkout, Chris?
Let's talk about the fight.
Chris wants him in a Reebok deal.
the fight for this was David Bear versus Nathan Bagentag Jones. Obviously, two very experienced guys. Chris, talk us through this one, buddy. Obviously, Nathan took the decision loss. What was your thoughts on the fight?
I'm biased because Nathan's my friend. You know, I've known Nathan for 5 or 6 years now. He's such a good guy. I know what he puts into MMA, and I know his background that actually brought me into the sport as well. He's such a talented guy, and he's known for his submissions. I think he's had 10 submission victories in his career, but he's actually a kickboxing black belt. He never seems to get his striking off, though, when he's fighting. He seems to be quite static in his movement, which is just such a shame because I can see, I know the fluidity of him. I see him when he trains. I watch the way that he moves. I watch him in his kickboxing world title fights. So he's got it there, but it just doesn't seem to quite work for him in the cage. And normally when you get to the ground, you know, Nathan's a whiz. He takes people out from whatever position. It doesn't matter whether he's on his back or whether he's on top. He's so dangerous on the ground. But Bear, it's David Bear. he just controlled him brilliantly. It was a really frustrating fight to watch. It's probably the most boring fight to watch on the card. But in terms of game plan, in terms of you know, intelligent fighting, I think David Bear, you've got to give him credit. Frustrating for Nathan. Definitely want to see him back in again. He's making a run for a title shot, and I'd definitely like to see him get one before the end of his career.
Hmm. Katie, where does for both guys really, where do they go next after these wins?
Well, I saw Nathan posted that he's not going to make any decisions at the moment. I don't know how old he is. Do you know, Chris?
33.
Okay, so he's not, you know, he's got a few years left in him. I'm sure, like, once he calms down and gets over the disappointment, he'll want to carry on. I know he's got a lot of other things, you know, going on as well, though, but I'd like to see him back in there. I know he wanted to go on a run for the title. I don't know whether he would be better off just having, like, some fun fights with some big names. Like, I'd like to see him fight someone that shows off his style. That, I think the three frustrating fights of the night were that one, the Darren Stewart one, and Chris Edwards, where they just couldn't get up off the ground, and it was just so frustrating for all of them, and you could just see it in all of their faces that They were just so disappointed they didn't get to display the skill set that they'd been training for such a long time. And I mean, I know from just BJJ sparring how annoying that is. I can't imagine once you've put that much into a fight camp how frustrating that is. So I get those emotions afterwards, and I'm glad nobody's making, you know, big decisions about their future at the moment.
Glenn, what's
I'd like to see if you, so just beforehand you said about fun fights, wouldn't you love to see Lahore versus Jones 2?
Definitely.
I would, but hasn't Lahore just signed for different promotions?
Oh, he signed for PFL last.
Yeah,
that's a shame.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
One thing I would say as well for Nathan, like the welterweight division at the moment, it's not that packed full of big names. Like obviously you've got the champion Ross has just gone, Darby left before that. He went to the UFC. Lahore's gone to PFL. You know, there's definitely place if Blankenship could put a few wins together. There's definitely a shot at the title.
There's definitely a way back for him, yeah.
Well, he'd won his last two, hadn't he? You know, if that would have been three in the bank, it would have been surely a title shot.
Yeah. Glenn, I want to ask you, because something Katie touched on was, you know, how frustrating performances like that are. As a fighter, you take a loss like that. How do you sort of bounce back and respond to that?
I don't mean to contradict Katie, but I feel as part of MMA. If we're doing like wrestling, then stick to K1, I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. It happened to me, my first loss with Logan. He just held me on the floor, and he, to be fair to me, smashed my face in, but it happened. I was overpowered, and I was just held on the floor, and I knew that's the only way to lose to him, because if he stayed on the feet and had a fun fight, then he could potentially have lost, but on the floor, I wouldn't have beat him. So it's part of MMA. I mean, loads of people moan who can just box or come on, stand and bang, and they know that's the only chance they've got to win. And if you want to fight MMA, then learn every aspect of MMA, in my opinion.
Yeah, fair play. Glenn, just a little sidebar there. When are we going to see you back competing again? Because you've been out for a little while, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been coming up to the year now in June. initially, I was meant to be fighting on the Cage Warriors Academy. That was agreed last November. Then I sprained my ankle. I went on a piss. Rango shouted at me. Then I broke my toe. I went on a piss. Rango shouted at me. And then I did my back in. And guess what? I went on a piss. And Frango pulled me out then. So I'm still struggling on the back injury now. As soon as it comes, we was going to fight in roughly about July, I'll be ready, sort of thing. So whatever show's ready after July, I'll probably, depending on what happens with COVID-19 now, I'll be ready at the end of the summer.
Yeah, you're going to be fighting amateur or jumping up to pro then?
No, I wouldn't. Possibly another one or two amateur. I don't think I'd be going pro, Lou. I think my body can't take much moment. You know, I was in camp for 2 years, trained proper for 2 years. I didn't have an injury. Now I'm picking them up almost every session.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, especially after leather in my body or rugby for years.
So, no, fair play. Well, look forward to seeing you back in anyway, Sledge. I know that's been a sidebar there, but I know it's been a while and wanted to just get out in.
I really miss being in camp, mate. I'm a far better person in fight camp, and I miss being that focused. At the moment, I'm just enjoying
myself. I'm with you.
what's everybody drinking tonight?
The
Alvino
on the go.
Dark fruits. Chris?
Water.
Oh, this is the unsensible one. There we are. So that takes us into the next fight, which was a fight a lot of people had looked forward to on this card. Paddy the Baddy Pimlet against Eddie Dalton. Obviously, Paddy's been out for a while. He's been struggling to get a matchup. His last one, obviously, with Joe Jannetty fell through because Joe didn't make weight. A long-awaited one. We didn't think this was going to go ahead, obviously, for the week, so it was a lot of kind of stress for Paddy, I think, throughout the week. We've seen from his Twitter. And obviously, he came in, got the job done, first round, ground and pound. Katie, I'll come to you first on this one. How did you think about Paddy's return?
Well, it's just really important for him to get back in there, get some cage time and get the win. I wish it had lasted a bit longer. I think Decky Dalton, if he'd put a whole fight camp into fighting Paddy, you know, would have done better. I think from what I got from the commentary, he last fought 2 weeks ago. And did he fight at 145 when he fought 2 weeks ago? So not ideal for him. And to be fair to him, he really gave it a good go of escaping once Paddy got on top of him. But he was never getting out of there. Once that body triangle was on, It was just fait accompli, I think.
Yeah, he's very good from that position, Paddy, and obviously a very dangerous.
I wish he'd got a bit more cage time, though. I think he could have done with a bit more of a test, you know, like maybe a proper lightweight, but he would have taken anyone, wouldn't he, just to make sure that he was on that card.
And Chris, what was your take on this fight? And obviously, you know, Paddy's, he has been waiting a long time. I know they say you don't get paid for overtime, so I suppose on one hand, you'll look at that as a positive, but what did you take of this match?
I was really, really happy for Paddy because he's had so much time out and he's had injuries, he's had the pullouts, it's just been problem after problem for him. And it seemed there was a conversation a few years ago about him being the next big thing to come out of the UK. I remember him being on the Ariel Helwani show. And at that point, we were thinking, yeah, surely he's going to go off to the UFC. And I think he had a bit of a suspect win against the American guy who'd been on turf. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't remember
which could have gone either. Julian Arosa.
That's the one.
Pop back in. Could have gone
Juicy
either
J.
way, that one. Juicy J, that's it, Juicy J. but then the great thing about Paddy this time, though, he's come out. You can see a completely different, more experienced, more well-rounded fighter. In the first 10 seconds, he got caught with this sweet little, it's a short left hook by Decky, just landed clean in the chops. And I thought, oh, he's coming out stiff and his striking's going to be suspect again. But then I think it's 25 seconds in, he caught him with his own straight right. So it just looked so much better as a fighter. He controlled the range and his footwork looked a lot better than usual. He looked calm, composed. And okay, it was a slip by Decky that allowed him to get on top. But it was just so intelligent once he got into that position. So it wasn't just the body triangle. It's the fact that he had Decky's right arm locked in the body triangle as well. So he had complete control over him. He knew full well he wasn't going to get him with a rear naked choke when he was locked up against the fence like that. But he was just squeezing the shit out of Decky's chin, making him uncomfortable, making him make a mistake, which would allow him to capitalise. And then when he did capitalise on him, the power you see him from Paddy now. You know, Paddy was always a tough-hitting kid, but now he's a 25-year-old man. He's actually getting that man strength. And you could see that he was hitting so hard when Decky was on the ground. And Decky doesn't, you know, it's the type of guy who doesn't have any quit in him. But he didn't like it one bit. So it's a really good stoppage. And I want to give a shout out to Paddy for his dance as well. Beautiful.
he is good, actually. He is good.
But no, I was really, really happy for him. And it's great to see. And for Cage Warriors as well, it's great to have Paddy Pimlet back because he is synonymous with the brand. And it'd be really good to actually see, you know, once all this coronavirus stuff's out of the way, Cage Warriors back in Liverpool, Paddy Pimlet headlining. Yeah, definitely want to see it. Love the kid. Yeah.
It's Glenn a shame Williams, he can't get a quick turnaround and get straight back in there, because I think he could really like do a building on this momentum.
Yeah. Glenn, I can see you shaking your head there, buddy.
Bring him to Cardiff. Get him to Cardiff. I don't think he's going to be fighting Mason for the title yet. I'd love to see him fight Mason in Cardiff. But I think Mason will fight the winner of Ben Lachdar and Jack Grant. That'll be in Cardiff. And then possibly Mason will go to the UFC. And then it'll be vacant. And then I think Paddy will fight for a vacant title at the end of the year in Liverpool. And again, his fans, he got millions. I'd love to bring him to Cardiff. I promise I won't have a go at any of them. I promise. But it'll be a great night to tell you that. Yeah.
Glenn, one thing I was going to say, Paddy has been calling out for his shot at the UFC now, I think, doesn't he? Do you think he can jump straight away? Or do you think he's... I was looking at it. I know Chris said about his striking. I don't know if his striking is... at that level, yeah. I mean, what's your take on Paddy going to the UFC?
Oh, I don't again because I think Paddy's really good when he's dominant. Okay, but with the UFC, so many wrestlers have been dominant in the light when he was in the UFC. Now, I think he'd be come in stuck a minute. I think the striking could probably do alright for a minute because he's so long. I like weight, but obviously he's deep work. But I think a genuine wrestler has put him on his back. Okay, you can snap a triangle from anywhere, but I think a couple more because. You know, he's rusty. He said 18 months off. He's going to be rusty again. So let's get back on top. We're going to feel his problems. And then I think, yeah, definitely UFC.
Yeah. Who do you think he fights next, Glenn? Anyone you can think off the top of your head that could be a good matchup for him?
I think he's got to fight Desmay. I was going to ask you just now. Anyone know why Desmay pulled out? Because I've been looking on my phone all day and I can't. There's a few rumours going about why, but I don't think it's true. I think it's because he's been accused of being on PEDs. But I've looked online, he's not injured, and he's just withdrew. I don't know why.
I've never heard any of those rumours, so I... I don't know.
That fight's got to happen, I think. Paddy and Desmond. That'll be a really good fight this week.
Isn't that fight as cursed as Tony and Khabib? Exactly.
Check out the same card. Maybe they'll cancel each other out.
While on the subject of Desmond, I think Desmond McColgan, that will be one of the best fights on Cage Warriors, I think. Both very good strikers.
Yeah, I know.
Oban
Elliott was calling up Paddy and Desmond as well, wasn't he? So that's another guy who's won in a big time.
Don't think it's a lightweight and win Britain that Oban hasn't called out yet, to be fair. He met out that. But fair to him. To be fair to him. But no, I think for me, so the guy that Ben Lachdal, the guy that Jack Grant's fighting, I think him and Oban, I think that would be an outstanding fight. Both strikers, Lachdal, Mediaian as he's known, is brilliant at scrambling, so he'd be hard for Oban to take down if he decides to wrestle him. I think that would be an hell of a fight.
Yeah,
I'd like to see Paddy versus Jordan Vucinic. I know Vucinic fights at 145 at the moment, but he's such a big lad, and he's another one who's so young. He's only 23, but he's the same size as Paddy. Now, him stepping up, that would be... Those two guys, I think, would just literally go at it.
Yeah, another good possibility there. So that takes us on. Obviously, Paddy Pimlet got his comeback win. That takes us to the fight before that, which... I'm going to start off with Katie Hunter on this one, because I know she had some very strong opinions on it. First of all, I want to say it was a brilliant fight. Perry Goodwin.
It was a brilliant fight.
Versus Steve Amable. A really great fight in the featherweight division. Two warriors going at it. Perry Goodwin obviously taking the unanimous decision there. A lot of people felt they went the other way. Katie Hunter, I know you were one of them. Talk us through this fight.
So I want to say that I thought it was an amazing fight as well. I've got no problems with the fight. It was my favourite fight on the whole card, but I think Perry definitely got the first round in terms of volume. I mean, to me, and I'm going to be coming back on you guys and asking you to be honest with me, because you know I have been accused of being biased in the before, so I even felt that Steve landed the harder shots in the first round, but I thought that you could give it to Perry Goodwin on the volume, and he was kind of controlling the pace, I thought. The second round, Steve dropped him, and he definitely did the more impactful shots, the most damage, effective striking, effective grappling. I don't think there can be any qualms that Steve took the second round. And then the third round, I thought that Perry won the first minute, maybe won the last minute, but I thought that Steve did more damage, caused more impact, like had more impactful shots. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts on judging and the rules and how they're supposed to be applied, and I felt more confident than before I'd done all this research into the rules. So although, having said that, the podcast that I got it from, they disagreed with me on the result, so there we go. But, I was really confident that it was going to be an aimable win. And I've spoken to a lot of people who felt like that. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, we want to say I don't want to seem like we're taking anything away from Goodwin, because he is an absolute savage guy. Probably a hell of a fight. And I did generally, when we first watched it, we were talking about it in the chat, I said, I think that could go either way, but I think Steve may have just edged it. But you know, for me, I wasn't mad at the decision at all. Chris, what was your take on the fight?
So, when I first watched it, I was 100% certain that Steve Amable would have won it. I thought that Amable had, as Katie said, had landed better in the first. I thought that in the second, he dropped him. And then obviously had the takedown with just over a minute and a half to go. Then the third, he took him down four times. But I watched it back today, and I saw it completely differently. I think Goodwin had the best of the first round. That was the one on the day I thought was either way. When Amable took Goodwin down in the second round, and he cut him open 10 seconds to go, he did nothing. He barely threw a strike. He literally jabbed him a couple of times in the ribs, maybe after he'd had him on the ground for 30 seconds. He sat there with his hands on his biceps, didn't actually do anything whatsoever from that position. He dropped him. But if you actually look at the volume of strikes in the second round, I thought the Goodwin actually landed a lot more than Aimable did. Aimable looked like he was controlling the fight because he was controlling the centre of the cage. He was walking him down. He looked like the more composed, more calm fighter. Because Goodwin's flashy. Everything he throws at 100%. And he does that reset that I really want his coaches to knock out of him, where he trots backwards. Everything he does looks like it's for effect. But if you actually look at the volume of the strikes that landed, I think that he probably landed just a few more. And then looking at the third, Aimable had four takedowns. He did nothing with any of them. On reflection, I think it's probably a good decision. At the time, I thought it was a dreadful decision. I was 100% set. I was actually saying 30-27 Aimable, but... But now, having watched it back again with the volume off, it really did change my mind on it. But one thing I do want to say about the fight, though, what the hell were they wearing? It was a battle of the bad shorts, wasn't it? Both shorts were dreadful. Perry looked like he was wearing pyjama shorts. And then was Stephen, like, I don't know, neon camo?
Camo.
I couldn't work it out.
He put up a poll for fans to pick what shorts they want him to wear.
They trolled him then. They got trolled because they were dreadful. But no, you know, they are such talented fighters, those two. They are so, so good. And it was a hell of a fight. There were so many good fights in the night, and I think it's probably fight of the night.
Yeah, it was a great fight. Glenn, third opinion on this then, buddy. First of all, who had the worst shorts and who did you give the win to? In your opinion?
I prefer Steve shorts. I like camo, even if it was bright black. But, Perry Godwin, I'm sure he borrowed Strauss's shorts, McCrowd, like the stupid lumberjack shorts. I don't know. But I was surprised how good Daniel Bill's wrestling was. I mean, but like Chris said, he didn't do much when he got him down, but that source happened. And then Godwin still got up. He still found the tank to go forward in the third. I would have given a third on a draw. 10-10. They're both going for it. They're both throwing the last round and find a draw from somewhere. You know what I mean? That would have been ideal. But I definitely want to give Godwin a win. I thought Aimable won.
Fair play. It really did divide opinion.
You're welcome down at BKK anytime, Glenn.
if I remember rightly, okay, the only power shot Godwin was landing. And he's a bigger guy. He looks the part. So the only power shot he was landing was the uppercut when he was coming in close distance, and he come back out pocket. I would like to see him throw that and go to second phase, but he wasn't. He was throwing it, coming back out. Not like resetting a load, but just coming out to the pocket. You either follow that up or something, or you set up a second phase. I didn't understand why he was doing that.
It was a great fight. I mean, I'm kind of, like I said, I was... At the time, I thought, I could go either way, but I did feel Steve just did enough. It's interesting to hear what you said, though, Chris, that you, on second watch, it was different, I guess. It's difficult to judge these fights sometimes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't envy them. I don't envy those judges at all, because that was a really high-level contest with two superb fighters. So it would have been... Could you imagine if Joe versus Mason had gone the distance as well, with the striking in that? Yeah. You know, they're moving like ninjas. You would never have been able to see what actually landed and what didn't. I agree as well.
Sometimes watch it again without the commentary. Because even though I was a neutral, I didn't have any favouritism. You can get swung by the emotion of the commentators by something that's going on. And then if you watch it back a second time, with a different eye, perhaps you might see things you didn't see the first time. Or like I didn't realise, like I said, that it was four takedowns and he didn't do nothing for 30 seconds. You know, that's a big difference. If you watch it again, you're like, okay, perhaps he's right.
But are you just thinking that because you know what the result is, though?
Possibly, yeah.
Do you know, did Chris, I'm not questioning you in any way, Chris, but do you think perhaps it's a subconscious thing there where you're thinking, okay, Perry did win that fight and now you're kind of looking for a reason to give it to him, perhaps? Is that a reason you might score
differently? No, I don't think so. I went into the fight wanting Goodwin to win. I like him. I think that if he tightens up his game, there's a lot to come from him. And he's a younger fighter as well. You know, don't get me wrong, Aimable's a great fighter, but you know, Perry was Perry's style I find attractive to watch. So when I watched it back today, I tried to be as critical as possible, just to see why he did win. And yeah, you know, it's so different when you haven't got that emotion coming through you. And it's so different when you're actually properly studying what people are doing with the takedowns as well. And as Kate was saying, judging with the new judging system, the old judging system, you'd be able to pick someone up, drop them on their ass, and if you can sit on top of them for 3 out of 5 minutes, then you're going to win the round. Whereas now, unless you actually do something effective with it, then you're not going to win the round. And, you know, Perry Goodwin popped up 4 times out of 4 in that third round. And in the second round, when Steve took him down, 1:25 on the clock, and I think it was maybe 35 seconds left before he threw any types of shots to his body. And it was only with 10 seconds left that he cut him open. So he did so, so little with it. And if Perry's landed more shots in that round, he's going to take the round, regardless of the fact that Steve finished in a dominant position.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Back to what you're saying about he popped back up, but he didn't do anything. What I'd like to see change is, okay, if you're a dominant striking, you win the striking, and then effective grappling, et cetera, et cetera. When he goes back to wrestling, I feel, if I've tried taking you down 3 times, and you've scuffed the attempts, I feel you were winning the wrestling, but it's not, they just cancel each other out. If I take it down once, because I've made a positive wrestling attempt, then I'm winning the wrestling. But I feel no. I've tried taking off 4 times. I've only been successful once. I think you should be winning. If you defended 3 takedowns, I think that should change. Because like a lot of people are brilliant at defending, but all right, they might get taken down once and then, I don't know, stuffed 4 attempts. But they're classed as not winning the wrestling because they got taken down once. I think they should change that.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, actually. Yeah, I never
because as far as I can see, wrestling isn't just takedowns. It's, you know, being able to stop takedowns. It's being able to control you on the floor. It's all different aspects, isn't it? It's not just the takedown. A lot more to wrestling than that. So I feel they should readdress that. And then, you know, wherever, if I stop you taking me down 3 times, and then you only get one, why are you winning in wrestling? You know, I've stuffed 3 attempts.
I suppose a lot of it is about control as well, isn't it? If you're stopping the takedown and defense, you're not necessarily controlling the other guy. You're just stopping him doing what he wants to do. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
you're stopping him. That's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to have a think about that a little bit more and sort of maybe come back to you on the next one. But I mean, Katie, what do you think is next for both of these guys now? Obviously, you're a big fan of Steve. You've watched a lot of Perry as well. What do you think is next for both of these guys?
Well, I think what's tough for Steve to take was that this fight had big title implications. Whoever won was putting themselves right back in the mix. So obviously Steve's last fight was the title fight against Mads. He's now walking away from this with 2 losses. So yeah, he's got to fight his way back up that division again. For Perry, he's right in the title mix. He probably needs one more fight before he gets that title shot. And it depends, really, doesn't it? Like, what's happening with... Does anybody know if Mads is injured or why Morgan was supposed to be fighting for the interim belt?
No idea.
Nothing.
I don't know.
So Morgan was supposed to be fighting Banovich for the interim title. Perry could potentially fight him for that title. I don't know. I reckon he probably needs one more. That was his first fight at featherweight. So I think he probably needs one more, but he's right in it. To beat Steve Amable, who was the last title challenger, that's got to put you straight in the mix, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That obviously takes on to the last fight we planned to talk about tonight, which was Conor Hisnett versus Darren O'Gorman. Now, this was a crazy fight. I mean, I'm going to come to you first, Chris. Obviously, we got a knockout win from Hisnett. He'd been in a little bit of trouble before that. I mean, talk us through this fight, Chris.
Well, basically, it's entire one-way traffic all the way through the fight until Conor Hisnett decided to throw this overhand right hook haymaker from hell and just landed it clean on O'Gorman and just dropped him. It was crazy. You got to feel for O'Gorman because he did everything right. And okay, yeah, he probably did burn his legs out at the end of the second, as the commentators were saying, and also as Hisnett's coaches were saying as well. So he was a little bit shaky. But, you know, he'd even landed a couple of decent left jabs on Hisnett. sorry, left hooks on Hignett, literally just before Hignett caught him. And he just, the guy's just made of rock, isn't he? His head's made of rock because he's took these two shots and you can see he wobbled a little bit. But then from nowhere, he just threw this massive shot and poor old Doug Gorman just didn't know what hit him. And he must be thinking still now, how the hell did I lose that fight? Because he won it everywhere beforehand. Okay, there's the heel hook attempt at the end of the second, but he dominated that fight up until he got knocked the F out.
Yeah, definitely. Katie, is that they were the biggest comebacks in Cage Warriors, do you think?
It's got to be up there, hasn't it? I just hope that's not going to haunt him forever, that, you know, he had so many opportunities to finish that fight and just couldn't quite get it done. Even when he was pulling on the head at one stage in the triangle, I thought that, like, his face was turning red and I thought, surely that's it. And I just think when he goes to sleep at night, I hope he's not replaying that in his mind and just driving himself nuts that it was there for the taking. And then, oh man, you've got to feel for him.
Yeah, it was a crazy fight, wasn't it? Glenn, what? Talk us through it, Glenn. What is going through your head, and how tough is Hignett to get through all the submission attempts, all those shots? What's going through this guy's head when he's in these bad positions to keep coming back?
First of all, I wonder if he would have taken that punch if he hadn't gassed his legs. I wonder if he would have taken that shot straight away in the first round. But obviously, I if I'd been amateur, okay, and do you know when he switched from the triangle to the arm bar and he had his hips off the floor and he was opening his arm, I think a referee stepped in and stopped that while it happened because his arm was clearly bent in half.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for him to come back from that, the point there, some people, if he snapped his arm, people would have said, oh, the referee stopped that. But because he'd come back, you know, it's clear the fight isn't over until it's fucking over, is it? To be fair, he was really good. But yeah, once he popped his head out, you can see he was going forward. Obviously, he got up on the floor and to start that last out. It was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. Really good.
Yeah, so it's always great to see. I mean, obviously, if you're an O'Gorman fan, you're not going to be happy with that. But it's always great to see someone come back like that, Kate, isn't it?
I love an underdog.
And just never give up, you know, to not just think, oh, I'm, you know, going to try and get through this and get the moral victory by not being submitted. He still knew that he could win it at that stage. And just, that was a Hail Mary. And he deserved that. It was quality.
Yeah, big knockout indeed. And that obviously covers the fights we wanted to discuss mainly. One thing I did want to bring up with Glenn was, a good friend of ours, another Welsh guy who fought on the card, Chris Des Edwards. Chris obviously been out for a while. He came back in and took a loss. A pretty straightforward loss. He was dominated for 3 rounds pretty much. What did you make of Chris's performance here, Glenn?
Yeah, gutted for him. But, you know, like I said, my prediction, it would have been, you see him trying to go for that heel, but it was the rest and he just taking his space away. He was just stopping him, attacking from the bottom. As a lot of the Freddy boys, they love fighting off the bottom. I know you shouldn't in MMA, but they're so good with the BJJ. I didn't think it was over until like the last 10 seconds. I thought he could still have got a sub. But and lucky for him.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy as well, Chris. He's taken loss before. He always bounces back. I mean, do you think he's a little bit too small for the weight that featherweight, perhaps?
Yeah, but again, he struggles to make weight at bantamweight, doesn't he? But for me, Chris always fights better as well, the better the opponent. I mean, his fight against Bulan, I absolutely loved that fight. He was there or thereabouts, and Bulan was one of the best in the division at the time, I felt. But yeah, I think he'd be fine. I think he'd come back from it.
Yeah,
I'd keep him a featherweight. I'd keep him a featherweight. I think it's better than that.
No, Chris, he's that guy. He always pops back. He really is an amazing competitor. So we look forward to seeing him in there again. And he's been out a while as well. I want to point that out. He had just over a year off. So look forward to seeing Chris get back in there again when this all blows over. Chris, what did you think of Hendon's performance? Did you see that fight? I know it was one of the first ones.
Yeah, I only saw bits of it. But the thing is, Hendon's a talented kid. The problem is with Hendon is he doesn't actually promote himself that much. So you hear nothing about him.
Yeah.
But he's just quietly built. He fights out of, I think he's one of Andrew Fisher's boys at the Fish Tank up in the northeast Sunderland sort of way. But, you know, I know his management, Hendon. So, and I speak to his manager quite often, and he says that he's such a talented kid. He keeps waxing lyrical about how good he is and how far he could go. But it'd be good to see Hendon actually start to create this persona, or at least allow his persona to come out outside of the cage as well, because he's got the platform now, sitting in Cage Warriors. You know, he's got a win over, so, you know, Edwards is a Cage Warriors veteran. So he's got a win over somebody who's actually a proper name. This is the opportunity now to actually build yourself up and start pushing your career forward. And I hope that Hendon does that.
Yeah. Katie, what was your thoughts on that fight?
Yeah, it was just much the same as what you guys said. It was a dominant victory for him. Chris, I've tried to interview Hendon before, and whatever his personality is doesn't come through that much. But it was a strong performance. And every time I've seen him, he's won, but he's someone that you kind of forget about afterwards, because there's not much on him in between fights, I guess, is why. But yeah, I've got a soft spot for Chris, so I wanted him to win that fight. And yeah, it was just another tough one. Like I said, there were three on the card that were just really frustrating. And Glenn, you're right, 100% is MMA, and people need to be well-rounded in all areas of the game and have answers for that. But when you're bloody stuck on the bottom and you're just getting kind of thrown around, it's just a long 15 minutes, isn't it?
It is. But I'm a massive wrestling fan at the moment. I think it's dominant in the sport, and everyone is it, whether on the bottom or on the top or whatever. But I'm hoping it's going to do the full circle again and evolve back to striking, but I can't see it for a while.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think one thing we should make note of you as well is that we need to give Hendon a little bit more of a push next time. We try and get him on for some interviews, I think, is that?
Yeah, good idea.
Chris. That ending, has he got a judo background or a wrestling background? Because I was really impressed with his control. Kicking the leg was, for me, I know it looks simple, but it's high level. He was really good with the body lock and the gable grip and kicking the leg up. He was really good.
He works with some very, very good guys up in the Northeast, but in terms of his skill set, it's literally he's managed by my friend Wad, and Wad says, you know, he's amazing. Just talks in the round about him rather than the specifics. But I keep being told he's one to watch, along with the young lad who we were going to talk about that we haven't quite got time for. I just wanted to drop a name in, Adam Amazinger. How good did he look?
Yeah, he didn't look too bad. Did he?
Oh my God, he was.
No, has James Hendon beat him? I'm trying to.
No.
That was the last second knockout.
They've
both got the same sponsor.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, both full Reptile. They're both in the same camp. Same management company. But Adam, he went out and he trained at Tiger Muay Thai because he couldn't go and train with his brother Dean in Shanghai because of the coronavirus issue. But then he came back and he trained with someone who I manage, Aaron Lele, because Aaron was supposed to be fighting a Shock and Awe. Aaron actually lost to Adam 2 years ago on Cage Warriors. It was kind of the making of Aaron. But he was just talking about how good Adam was going to be in this fight. And I thought, he's just talking about it because it's his mate, you know, his training partner. He just controlled everything in that fight. He controlled the range. He controlled exactly where the fight took place. His knees were absolutely lethal. You know, the need to set up the initial knockdown, and then he got on top and he just started pounding away on poor Jake Bond. And then the need to finish it as well. It was like a walk-off knee finish.
Yeah.
It, absolutely brutal. And, you know, I was a big fan of his brother Dean years and years back when he first went on to Tough 9, I think it was. I think Adam's going to outstrip Dean. I think he's going to go further than him because he's every bit the star, that kid.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was a big stoppage, a big win for him coming back. And another one we should shout out just quickly as well, is Aidan Stevens. I know, obviously, we've got a big Scottish fan base who want us to mention that fight. It was a great dominant performance by him. Katie, do you want to just speak a little bit about Aidan? Because it was a great win, wasn't it?
It was. It was fantastic, wasn't it? The way that takedown just looked so effortless for him, and then it was just all one-way traffic. I do feel sorry for Jack. They were both supposed to have other opponents. Aidan was supposed to be fighting one of my teammates, Emra, and I would love to see that fight for him again, you know, being made. Ember was sick, so he couldn't fight. But yeah, just as soon as he got him to the ground, it was just vicious, wasn't it?
Very dominant on the floor, isn't he, Aiden? So
yeah, it was fantastic.
So yeah, I mean, guys, one thing I just want to round this off with was what was your take on this card overall? Chris, I'll come to you first. You know, a lot of sort of comments either way that it should be on, it shouldn't be on, given the circumstances with COVID-19. What was your take on the card overall, coming away from it now, a couple of days later?
Initially, my first thought was it shouldn't be on because of the health, because of the pandemic, the sweep in the globe. I don't think that we in the country are taking it seriously enough. I still don't think we are now. However, I am so pleased it was. it was so entertaining that, you know, bearing in mind the amount of work that they had to do, they had to move the venue, they had to keep rematching people. There's pressure about whether they'd even be able to have it on, because Wood Boris actually announced that he was going to cancel all events, you know, prior to the actual event happening. For all of that to still go on, and for them to put out a quality card like that with banger after banger after banger, and it's not as if it was just, you know, first round knockout, rolling the next guy. It was highly talented fighter against highly talented fighter, and I think people underestimate the role of a matchmaker, and we're blessed in the UK to have two world-class matchmakers. Obviously, you've got Ian Dean and Cage Warriors, and then you've got Drew Samuel over at Bellator. You know, these guys, their eye for talent and the way that they can actually craft a fight, we are so, so lucky to actually have that ability in the UK. So, huge hat off to Cage Warriors. They put on a fantastic event. Even though the place was empty, I still think they managed to create an atmosphere as well. Yeah. You know, I'll even give credit to Wharton for that, for his unbelievable rules. But he, you know, he always works well with Josh Palmer, and I thought he worked really well with Daniel Strauss as well. I thought that they actually helped to create the narrative of the night and actually built up the event. So really, really good event, fantastic. And if it's the last event that we've got for 6 months, I think we're blessed. So they did superbly well.
Yeah, Katie, did you enjoy the fights?
I really enjoyed the fights. I felt, you know, especially the Perry Goodwin, Steve Aimable one, I felt like that, to me, felt like there was a crowd there. Yeah. They looked like two people fighting their hearts out for the crowd around them. So they did do an incredible job. And again, I always give a shout out to Ian Dean for, like, not just this card, they really build a narrative around every fighter that's in Cage Warriors. Like, you become so invested in them, and it's easy to kind of see who's going to fight who next. And, like, there's a clear path to the title. There's obviously a clear path to the UFC for the people who are going to do that. And I just, like, there wasn't a single fight on the card where I didn't care about, like, one, at least one of the fighters, or, you know, wasn't torn, because I love both of the guys fighting each other. And, you know, there's big implications for whoever walks away with an L. Like, I just think they do a really, really good job of building storylines for these guys. And, yeah, I thought the fighters did their part in delivering, because it would have been so easy. Their heads must have been scrambled from that whole week of it's on, it's off, it's in Manchester. Oh, my God, Boris has just said that, you know, everything's going to be shut down. Does that mean Cage Warriors as well? Their phones must have been going nuts all week. I saw loads of them put out, like, please stop messaging me, like, every update. I can see it. I'm hearing it myself. Like, how they kept their head straight enough to go in there and fight like that, I think, you know, I just massive respect to them. Whether you think it should have been on or off, you've got to have massive respect for what they did in there. I think they're all amazing.
Yeah, definitely. And Glenn Williams, last word on Cage Warriors 113.
I just hope they find out that no one got COVID-19 at all. But one thing I will say, right? Being, I don't know, learning to be a coach or whatever you call it, apprentice coach or whatever. I enjoyed listening to coaches, because a lot of them could see how emotionally attached they are, how educated they was, what they were looking for. Even though one fighter's doing one thing, they're shouting opposite, and I'm trying to think to myself why, and when they was doing it, I'm like, that's why. So it was good to listen to the coaches, because you could hear every single word every coach is saying. And then you'd never ever get that. When's the last time you watched the show and was able to listen to the coach like you could on Friday?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
No, I thought that was really good.
Any quotes that stuck out for you, Glenn?
And I hate to say it, but Jack Mason was pretty good. Shaky, but I know how good Shaky is anyway. Eric Torres is an amazing coach. You know, I know how good he was. There's a couple of guys that I didn't know who I thought was good talking as well. I'm not sure which was which, but Perry Godwin and Steve Amable fight. The Perry Godwin's coach, he was good. No, to be fair. But yeah, it was good. A couple of them was good.
Yeah, what was your take? Did you enjoy the card overall, Glenn?
Yeah, I did. I really did. It was good. There's a few more fights I would like to see go ahead on there. I mean, there's rumours of Obama's meant to be fighting up there, but it didn't happen. I would like to see him be up there. You know, there's a couple of people I'd like to see him fight. But yeah, it was, you know, 11 fights for Cage Wars fight. It's quite small, but yeah, it was still a great night.
Yeah, and when
see us off in the Sunset Village.
Yeah, I loved it. I think it was a lot of it was anticipation. Like I said, I was supposed to be up there for Cage Wars and UFC, so not having that, but still being able to sit down through all everything that was going on and still watch some fights. You know, I was happy to get some beers in, get a big pizza and sit down and scream at the computer for an hour. So I love this card and really glad it went ahead. And yeah, like everyone has said, I have to reiterate that even though it might be the last one for a couple of months, that's a good way to end it. And as for us guys, I think we're going to have to start kind of trying to get some different content now because we're not going to have any shows for a while. Obviously, we want to keep on going. So maybe we'll do a couple more of these over the next couple of months and we'll find some stuff to talk about.
If people have got any ideas, they should definitely drop us a line. Anything they'd like to see us talk shit about.
I'm working on one now and I'm working on the reason why people are leaving rugby for MMA. So I'm going to dig deep into that and see what I can find.
Yeah. No, fair play, Glenn. Guys, what are we all doing for the lockdown over the next couple of weeks? We all working from home. We all still out and about. What's going on with you, Glenn? What's your plans for the next couple of months?
Well, I'm a regularist in work, so I can't work from home. I can't. But we are to an extent, but we're on an emergency breakdown service. So tomorrow I got to go in and do a job in the morning. We got something planned for Tuesday, but there's no mingling in the canteen for dinner or anything. We go in doing the job. Once the job's done, we're coming home. So stay away from as much social activity as possible, because obviously in the mess rooms and stuff we sit with the boys and me. So we go from them. I had my boy on Saturday. As horrible as it sounds, it's possible it could have been the last time I'm going to see him for a bit, because obviously we'll be with his family to take him out or whatever. So
it's tough. It's a tough time for everyone. And Katie, I know you're a bit of a social butterfly. What's the next couple of months going to be like for you? Step behind closed doors.
Well, I think we're going to have to do more of this and more wines over Skype, I think.
You're from home at the moment working, or?
Yeah, I'm working from home. So I've got like a corporate job in London. So we're all logged in from home and I'm working from my conservatory. So I hope it doesn't start raining because it leaks in there.
So Lee's back with you in the house for the next couple of months, is he?
Yeah.
And Chris Manuel? What's happening with you, buddy?
Well, Katie and I both work in the same sector, so I'm working from home as well. But very much like Glenn, I had my little girl the weekend before. And I think that's going to be the last time that I can actually have her for a while, simply for the same reason. She's got a bit of respiratory weakness, so we are, me and her mum are making sure that we keep her very much isolated. So at the moment, I'm doing, I'm the fit one. I'm a bit like Will Smith in I Am Legend. So I'm the one that goes out hunter-gathering. I'll go out and I will pick up groceries for them. I'll drop it at their door, step back for 5 feet to make sure that I don't actually breathe on my child, say hello to her, and then off again back home. So hopefully that'll work and we can keep everyone safe. And hopefully I won't go full, Leonardo DiCaprio on the beach and start smearing my excrement on the walls because I'm not actually having physical contact with people for 3 months. But
I'm missing cuddling people. I really am.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Even a handshake. You know, you don't have physical contact with someone for so long. It's just the strangest of things. But
yeah, the elbow there.
Yeah. So my girlfriend went for a walk today and he was doing that. Sorry, Chris. When he was getting all out and he was walking to pass people.
Mad. And I just want to give a shout out for Chris there. That's the first time I've heard someone compare themselves to Leonardo DiCaprio and Will Smith in one sentence. So
only Will Smith in
always modest there, Chris.
I try, Lou.
Well, guys, thank you for joining me tonight. Obviously, it's always great catching up, but I think we'll definitely try and do more of these. Guys, please like, share, retweet, do whatever you're going to do with this. Please keep watching us and sharing our stuff. And obviously, we can keep making more then. Until next time, guys, thank you very much. And I will see you all soon. Take care.
Cheers, Rob. Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Bye, bye.